are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Yeah, I guess I'm probably a little bit higher. You know, we know Maben is going to get hurt. He's got the track record of getting hurt. But if you're taking him late in your draft, you throw him in there when he's healthy, and Miami has nothing to play for.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
If you guys want more Humidor talk, I think Justin had Derek Carty, who's pretty much like the Humidor president at this point, on his podcast a couple days ago. So you guys can go check that out.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Mike the Rotocop here for another edition of the Dirt Dogs podcast. Just like last week, I'm joined by the same two guys, Randy Haynes.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
And Colin Weatherwax. What's up, Colin?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
So let's just hop right into it. I think the last time we talked was Sunday the 18th, or maybe the day before, Saturday the 17th. Surprisingly, a bunch of stuff has happened since then. Seems like a slow off season, but now it's kind of picking up ever since some of the moves have been made, ever since the Darvish move and everything. And this week's big news, and it's kind of weird that he really hasn't signed the contract yet. They still haven't done the physical. Everybody knows J.D. Martinez signed with the Red Sox, but the fantasy implications here are huge. If the deal does get done, granted, nothing else holds it up. The physical, I think, they have scheduled for tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. Now, I want to talk to you, Colin, a little bit about what you think the situation with J.D. in Boston is going to be as far as playing time and lineup for pretty much the fallout for the other guys. What do you think?
So I think he's actually going to be their full-time designated hitter, which is great for him, especially with his injury history. He's going to be in the middle of that lineup, supposedly right behind Hanley and in between Hanley and Devers. So that puts me even higher on Devers than I was before, which is pretty high. And then he's always been a high BABIP guy, but that ballpark is going to be better than the post-Humidor Arizona ballpark. So he's a heavy pull hitter. I think his average will go up just because his home runs will decrease because of that big old monster over there in left field. So, but other than that, I still have him as a top six outfielder, and I feel a lot more comfortable taking him at the end of the second round, beginning of the third round turn, than I did before he got to the Red Sox.
And just to step aside from the fantasy implications for a second, Randy, I wanted to get your take on the baseball side of things here. The contract's 5 years, or is speculated at 5 years, $110 million, and he has those two opt-outs after, I think it's the second year and the third year. What are your thoughts on the contract-wise for JD? Did they get a bargain here in Boston?
I think they might have gotten a little bit of a bargain, but it's still, you know, JD still has kind of got what he was going after to begin with. He gets those couple opt-outs as an added bonus. I have a feeling that second opt-out might have been what put it over the top for him. You know, Boris was throwing out there something close to $200 million at the beginning of the offseason. Everybody knew he was never going to get that. So I thought it worked out well for both sides. And, you know, he's going to be a majority DH. It should keep him, in theory, should keep him healthier and, you know, boost up his numbers.
And I think him playing DH is the best route to go here. And that leaves you at a platoon at first base with Moreland and Hanley. What do you think this does to Hanley's value, Colin?
I guess it goes up. I mean, he had a very bad season last year after, you know, coming in pretty hyped. But, I mean, I'll definitely take a flyer on him in the later rounds, but it's not someone that I'm going to definitely reach for just because I saw the skills kind of deteriorate a little bit last year. Having JD right behind him is definitely going to help him, but he's kind of in the Smoke Zimmerman range where I'm just kind of staying away.
See, I disagree with that a little bit. I think those guys I would be more comfortable with than Hanley, because at this point, Hanley's pretty much going to be a backup DH and a platoon first baseman. I don't know how many at-bats he's going to get. Randy, do you think this is good for Hanley's value, or he's worse off here?
Yeah, I think it kind of kills his value. He's a mess in the field, even at first base. So you've got that going for him. Moreland's always been at least, at worst, an above-average defensive first baseman. You know, Moreland's got the platoon advantage. And if Hanley doesn't start off the season, you know, hitting like he was a few years ago, Boston's going to put him to the bench because they're, I don't know the exact details, but there's an escalator in his contract for number of at-bats that would, you know, get him a substantial amount of money, and I believe guaranteed the last year of his of his contract. So if he's not hitting, Boston isn't going to throw him out there just for the sake of throwing him out there anymore, especially now with JD. There could always be some injuries, obviously, if JD himself gets hurt, or if there's an injury to any one of those outfielders, it could get Hanley some more regular playing time. But if he doesn't come out at the gate, you know, swinging a hot bat, I could see him getting put to the bench fairly quickly.
Yeah, and that's what I was about to bring up. I don't remember the number of at-bats it was specifically either, but I know there is an escalator in his contract that Boston's probably going to stay away from, because they're not going to pay a guy who they don't really need at this point with JD there and Mitch Moreland and everybody else they got. So there's a bunch of fallout from JD going to Boston, and there's a bunch of fallout in a couple things that Tampa did over the weekend. And the first thing they were in, or over the, yeah, over the weekend, and the first thing that they were a part of was the three-team trade. The Yankees acquired Brandon Drury, Arizona got Souza and Anthony Banda, and Tampa Bay got Nick Solak from the Yankees. And before we get to the Tampa fallout and all this, we'll start with Brandon Drury going to New York. He's coming off a pretty good year, and Cashman is still saying he's going to be in a competition at third base with Andujar. I think that's more for talk, for show, than is realistic. But my big problem with Drury was he was a .236 hitter on the road. You've seen all the splits. He was great at home in Arizona, and he probably would have been affected by the humidor a little bit this year. But Drury really didn't hit well on the road. Colin, do you see him as an everyday third baseman and an ownable everyday third baseman in fantasy?
I don't see him as a third baseman. Actually, I see him as their second baseman, at least until Glaber comes up. And that was his primary position last year. I know you talked about his severe home road splits, but he's definitely going to a better park in New York than he was in Arizona for his type of power. That being said, he's also going to an easier division. Now, it is NL to AL, so there is a lot of different pitchers that he has to get accustomed to. But, yeah, I think Andujar should definitely start out at third base. Right now they have Tyler Wade slated as their second baseman. So I think the smart play would be to put Drury at second with Andujar at third, and then just have Drury, you know, bat at the bottom of that lineup, hopefully turn it over for the top guys, making him another leadoff hitter for them.
Randy, do you agree with Colin?
Yeah, it doesn't change his value much for me. Like you said, with the humidor factor coming in, he was getting a little bit of a downgrade. It is, but now he goes to a nice hitter's park, good division, full of good parks to hit in, and a much better lineup. Drury's somebody, he's still only 25, but in the minors, he always showed better walk rates and strikeout rates than what he's performed in the majors. You know, somebody at that age, he could still grow, but it's just kind of, you know, for me, left a little bit to desire. He doesn't really have platoon splits, which is nice. Last year, he was .314 weighted on base, .329 weighted on base, left versus right. So there's no really worries about him falling into a platoon as long as he repeats those numbers. I do think one of Andujar and Torres is gonna miss out on some playing time here as a result of this. I guess it could be one of those things where at the start Andujar is playing every day, and eventually Gleyber Torres comes up and takes his spot. But before this trade, I thought there was a scenario where both of those guys were, at least by the end of May, were everyday players for the Yankees, which would have been really exciting. But Drury could still produce some nice value.
So this is kind of like a spider web thing here where you got to attach everything together. So now that Drury's out there, you could slide Chris Owings into second base in Arizona. You guys, starting with you, Colin, think that's going to really be great for Chris Owings and his value, or you still think he's not really going to be that great of a player getting every day at bats?
Yeah, he was one guy that I was definitely targeting late, but the one that I actually wrote in my piece that came out on friendswithfantasybenefits.com this past week, the all-sleeper team, was Ketel Marte, and I'm really excited about him for late steals, late average, and now that he has guaranteed playing time, I feel a whole lot better about him being their shortstop for this year coming up. So,
and Colin, what do you think? You think Chris Owings is a guy to go out there and get, or are you still shying away?
Yeah, I think he's gonna play every day. Him and Marte pretty much solidifies second and short. Yeah, they both have a nice late speed. Owings has a little bit of a pop, and if there's some injuries like there usually is in the Arizona outfield, he could, you know, slide back out into the outfield, gain some extra eligibility. And as far as what else is left in Arizona, I think anybody that was left on Yasmani Tomas Island can finally swim back to shore, because I think some of these moves kind of spell the end for him. So
yeah, and that's my segue into that three-team deal. Arizona got Steven Souza, who is a 30 home run guy last year, low average at 240, so he's really not going to replace J.D. Martinez, but at least in the power department, he'll give them a little bit of something. And they got Anthony Banda. They also signed Gerard Dyson, and like you said about Tomas, his island is pretty much, he's out there by himself now. Now, Randy, in Arizona, Steven Souza, definitely a guy you want to grab for power, or you think it's going to decrease a little bit?
I don't see where there's much of a change adding the humidor, because Tampa isn't a great hitter's park to begin with. The one thing that does worry me with Souza going there is no DH for him to play, and Souza's somebody that's had a few injury issues in the past. Arizona runs more than Tampa, so at worst case, your steals are probably going to stay neutral for him. If not, you get a little bit of boost. So even if the power comes down a little bit or there is a few less games played without the DH, he still should provide a nice steals for fantasy owners.
Yeah, and Colin, I just wanted to get your thoughts real quick on the signing of Gerard Dyson and where you think Yosmani Tomas is going to end up in all this.
I think Dyson is definitely going to be their fourth outfielder. He's going to be the injury replacement for their injury-riddled outfielders, their starter ones. Pollock, Souza, like you said, Randy, and then Peralta out there, they're starting three outfielders. So he's definitely going to be a guy that you get late in drafts as insurance for those three injury-prone hitters. As far as Tomas, I see him either being a bench bat or then just moving him. And if they move him to an AL park, I'll be very excited about it. So that way he can start DHing, because he is a liability anywhere you put him on the field besides DH. So, but if he gets traded anywhere in the NL, I'd probably stay as far away as I am now.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where he's better off suited as a DH somewhere. So now we talked on last week's show about Tampa DFAing Dickerson, and they also got Nick Solak in that trade. So obviously their whole theme here has been going younger and getting rid of the guys, getting rid of some of their older guys. So today, actually, they traded Dickerson over to Pitt in exchange for Daniel Hudson and Gray. And now Pittsburgh's sitting there with Corey Dickerson, Polanco, and Marte as their outfield, which is actually a pretty good fantasy outfield and a pretty good outfield in general. Randy, I just wanted your opinion on Corey Dickerson. I know he had the bad second half that we talked about last week and the great first half. What do you think his value is like in Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh's a slight bump park-wise for left-handed power, but kind of similar to Souza. Now there's no DH, and Dickerson's somebody that DH'd a good bit last year for Tampa and has had injury issues in the past, especially when he was in Colorado, you know, playing the outfield every day. So that could hurt his value, as he might not get the same amount of counting stats that he was able to get last year. And I kind of, when I saw this deal go down, I thought that he might, basically Pittsburgh's getting him as potential trade bait down the line. If they fade like they're expected to do in the first half, maybe they can turn around and flip Dickerson, because, you know, they still have Austin Meadows. You know, they had Frazier penciled in to maybe play the outfield. He kind of goes back to the utility role. So I think Dickerson's stay in Pittsburgh might be kind of limited.
Yeah, I can definitely see them using him as trade bait down the line. Colin, real quick, I'm going to read you some names out of that Tampa bullpen, and you tell me if there's anybody, if there's any chance that Daniel Hudson could be a sleeper for saves down the road, barring a Colon May trade or an injury. Their bullpen's looking pretty weak with Sergio Romo, Dan Jennings, and other than that, you got Chaz Rowe, Jose Alvarado, Matt Andrees, Andrew Kittredge. They really don't have many names in that bullpen. So do you see Daniel Hudson being an extra sleeper, if you will, to getting saved somewhere down the road if they either trade Colon May or he gets hurt?
Yeah, definitely if they trade Colome, he would bump right into that role, I think. Tampa Bay actually called me on my way home. They wanted me to come to do an open tryout since they're just, you know, giving roster spots away now. But other than that, yeah, I think Solak, the guy they got back from New York, he projects to be a good hitter at the major league level. But right now he's kind of like the Willie Calhoun. He doesn't really have a good position. Right now they have him slated as a second baseman, but his defensive metrics are really bad. But yeah, for Hudson, if Colomay gets traded, then I see him sliding right into that role. He might be someone that you get in the middle rounds, probably even later than that. Say the trade goes down before draft season. But if the trade doesn't go down, I'll probably take a flyer on him later on in the draft just in case.
Yeah, and he's a guy that didn't have too much value before today. But something like this comes along, and in the right situation, he could end up having a ton of value and being drafted way higher than what his ADP is if you're doing drafts from now until the start of the season. And also what happened today was Brent Honeywell got injured, and they're calling it a forearm strain, which kind of sucks because I was really looking forward to this guy pitching to see what he has. He's actually also a great Twitter follower, He's like roasting people left and right. But with the Honeywell injury, and you got rid of Dickerson, you got rid of Souza, and you're obviously going younger, what I was taken back by was that Tampa pretty much came out this week and said they're unlikely to further tear down their roster. My thing is, if you're going to go for it, really go for it. You don't want to be in that middle of that transition period where you want to win games and put fans in the seats, so you don't want to do a whole rebuild, but then you're going to lose in the long run because you're still paying all these guys and doing what you're doing. Colin, if you're a Tampa fan, and I'm not saying that you are, but if you're a Tampa fan, wouldn't you want them to basically tear down the whole entire thing and start from scratch?
Oh, yeah, definitely. If I was a Tampa Bay fan, I would be calling for Archer to be traded. I would be asking why in the heck they signed Carlos Gomez. I know he's kind of like a clone of Corey Dickerson, but he's a lot worse and a lot older. It muddies the waters for Malik Smith, who I was very high on, as we talked about last week. But yeah, if I'm a Tampa Bay fan or even a player like Kiermaier and Archer, and they've already, you know, voiced their disapproval of what they're doing there in Tampa, I would be expecting them to be traded or either hold out. I know we don't see any baseball holdouts like we do football ones, but I know they're not happy. And if I was a Tampa Bay fan, I'd be wanting to, you know, start over from scratch and see where we can go in a couple of years.
And Randy, I know you're a Baltimore fan, and they're kind of in the same position, not to really as much of the same scale, maybe a little lesser, where they're pretty much in between deciding, do we want to compete now or do we want to tear this thing down? Do you agree with me and Colin that Tampa should really just tear this thing down now and start from scratch?
Well, they've kind of already started. I guess the difference between Tampa and Baltimore is Baltimore hasn't started doing anything to tear it down. So, but with Tampa, they've kind of already started the foundation for that. I get wanting to wait into the season for the right deal to come along for somebody like an Archer and someone like Kiermaier. But it's just kind of disappointing, back to what you said with Honeywell. I was really looking forward to him to pitch this year, and we don't know if he's going to need Tommy John or any other kind of surgery, but I do think just this little scare will definitely push him back into at least, I would think, June at this point. Tampa likes to keep their guys down as long as they can as is, and now if his spring training and his timetable is pushed back, we might not see him until, I mean, August, if we see him at all this year, if there's any kind of major issue here.
Yeah, and regardless of how serious the injury is or not, you know they're going to take a conservative approach with him at this point because they're not winning any games now. What's the point of rushing him back there? So I personally don't think we're going to see Honeywell this season at all, but I hope we do because I remember watching him with the Durham Bulls in the championship game last year. He came in relief, and he was into it, man. That kid really, really enjoys the game. He's definitely into it, so I was looking forward to that. Another prospect I was looking forward to seeing is Forrest Whitley with the Astros, their number 2 prospect. He gets a 50-game suspension, and the stories coming out are a little weird. From what I've seen, I guess he was taking Adderall. He took some kind of substance to stay awake on a long car drive. I'm doing air quotations if you could see me. But I don't know what the actual deal with all this is. Just I knew Forrest Whitley's not going to be pitching for the start of the 50-game season. So Forrest Whitley going down, is there any chance you're drafting him, Colin? Maybe he comes up later in the season like originally planned? Or do you think this just sets his timetable completely off the tracks right now?
Well, unfortunately, I just drafted him in a dynasty league, so at least it's a dynasty league, but I'm a little upset about that. As far as this year, I think it kills his value in redraft leagues, because the earliest he could come up, it would be late May, early June, and that's with, you know, only 5 or 6 games under his belt at the minor league level. So if the Astros bring him up this year, I think it'll be a September call-up now because of the suspension. That being said, I think Brad Peacock's value goes way up, because there was talk that Forrest Whitley would be, you know, one of their injury replacements if one of their top 5 got hurt, like Lance McCullers, because I think he's already thinking about getting hurt. So Brad Peacock, I think his value goes way up. I was already drafting him as the middle reliever type guy, like Andrew Miller, but with him possibly getting anywhere between 150 and 175 innings this year, now because Whitley's suspension, I'm definitely jumping on board on him.
Listen, I'm as big of a Brad Peacock fan as there is, so that's something I really enjoy hearing. Randy, do you have any interest in Forrest Whitley this season or no?
Not in a redraft. Any chance that you know he had of being picked late in a redraft or like a really deep league kind of went out the window with this. So I agree with everything Colin said. This does solidify Peacock as that first injury replacement up if they need one. So it's that's pretty much all there is to take from it.
Yeah, so now we talked about the big moves. There are a bunch of other moves that we'll just touch on real quick. Cameron Maybin in Miami signs a one-year deal, and I guess he's going to hit a leadoff for them and pretty much get every day at bats. He had 33 stolen bases in 114 games last year. He could obviously still run. Colin, how high are you on Maybin's value now he's in Miami?
A little bit more than I was. I would still prefer Malik Smith over him, if you could believe that. I think that he went ring chasing the past couple of years, and now that he got that ring with the Astros this past year, he's just going to milk out the rest of his career and try and play a little bit more. He is injury prone. He's getting older, so that means he's going to lose the speed that he once had. But there's a really bad offense around him, and he is going to a great pitcher's division, so that's a lot of negatives towards him. And then if Brinson starts to tear it up in the AAA, if they keep him down there or even in the major league level, he could easily become their fourth outfielder. So I'm still not as high on him as most people. I think there was a discussion in our chat this week about Malik Smith versus Maybin, and I was all on the Malik Smith board. So that's my thoughts on Maybin.
Yeah, Randy, you feel the same way, or are you a little higher on Maybin than Colin is?
Yeah, I guess I'm probably a little bit higher. You know, we know Maybin is going to get hurt. He's got the track record of getting hurt, but if you're taking him late in your draft, you throw him in there when he's healthy, and there's Miami has nothing to play for. You know, if anything, they want to probably boost, you know, try to boost up his trade value to flip him. So there's no reason that he can't run, you know, anytime there's an open base in front of him. So, you know, as far as it goes, like you brought up Brinson, I don't know if this really affects Brinson much because they don't have any other outfielders. You know, I mean, Derek Dietrich and Martin Prado and, you know, I think J.B. Shucks on their 40-man roster, like, those guys aren't keeping Lewis Brinson down, you know, even if Maybin performs well. So, I do, you know, Maven's current ADP is 386, 97th outfielder. I'd be willing to bump him up probably, you know, 10 to 15 spots ahead of that just because you know when he plays, he's going to run.
Dance. Yeah, but Randy, on Brinson, if you're a Miami fan, don't you want him to stay in AAA to gain that extra year of eligibility whenever they might be, you know, somewhat competitive?
I mean, yeah, but if he's killing it in AAA, there's no one on this major league roster, even now that they've added Maybin, that is going to block him. When he's ready to play and they think it's time to bring him up, like I said, Martin Prado and Derek Dietrich should not be blocking anybody, so I don't. If he starts the year in the minors, I expect, and he gets off to a good start, I expect Brinson to be up pretty quickly.
And Prado's recovering from that injury, so he's still questionable for the start of the season. So I could see Brinson being on the opening day roster.
Yeah, Scott Van Slyke's on their roster, and I didn't realize he was even still in the majors. So that just kind of tells you the lack of players that Brinson would have to leapfrog to get into the everyday lineup.
Yeah. So another signing, and I don't know how much fantasy value this is going to hold, Jesse Chavez in Texas on a one-year deal. Any value there for you, Colin?
Not really, but with him being in the AL West mostly his whole career, it's an underrated signing. I mean, we do need an innings eater in Texas, so that's a little bit helpful, but they probably want him to be their long reliever. I'm still not touching him anywhere, really.
Yeah, he's just going to be one of those swing men, like, is getting popular now. Randy, any value from Jesse Chavez?
No, not really. He's had a couple of nice moments in the past, but he's better suited to be a reliever. You know, second and third time through the order as a starter, he gets crushed. 6.75 ERA last year, second time through. 7.54 ERA, third time through. He's better suited as a reliever.
Yeah, I agree. Another signing was Carlos Gomez, which we touched on earlier. And I'm pretty sure, Colin, you said he's a worse version of Corey Dickerson. Is that what you said?
Yeah, definitely. He'll never be as good as he was in Texas or Milwaukee. So right now they're just paying for a body out there in the outfield.
Yeah, he's another guy. Maybe they'll push and hope he has a good start of the year, use him as some trade bait. Any value for you there, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, he was solid when he played last year. But again, it's only 105 games. There was multiple DL stints. He's and to me, kind of like for this year only, like a lesser version of Maven, because you're not going to get that speed, but you know when he is healthy, you're at least going to get some kind of production. You know, playing on turf doesn't help somebody like that, you know, with the injury histories that he has, so maybe it's even worse this year. But yeah, he's a late flyer, somebody you grab AL only or like a real deep mix, but nothing crazy.
Yeah. So one guy I know you're pretty wanted to talk on, Randy, that you may be pretty high on, higher than me, is Chris Tillman coming back to Baltimore. How do you feel about that one?
Oh, wait, Chris Tillman isn't your Cy Young pick?
No, definitely not.
The only reason I kind of wanted to bring him up is because before the disaster last year, when he was hurt his shoulder in spring training and he rushed back and velocity was down and he was just a train wreck, you know, with an ERA over 7. You know, 3 of the 4 years before that, he provided, you know, nice mixed league value, back end staff of a 15 teamer, somebody that's always used a, you know, high fastball to get pop ups and get some called strikes that allowed him to outpitch his peripherals. I'm not drafting him anywhere, but if he gets off to, you know, a good start in April, he's somebody that could work his way back to the end of like a mixed league rotation.
I don't know if it was your Twitter or somebody else's. You can't spell win with Tillman. Was that you?
I didn't know. Somebody, I did see that tweet. I laughed pretty hard at that. But it's, you know, it's. I had a conversation with an Orioles fan friend of mine the other day, and we were like, who's the best pitcher, starting pitcher that this team has had since Mike Messina? And it's probably Chris Tillman. You know, Eric Bedard had the one big year, but over the, you know, of any kind of longevity, it's probably Tillman, which is sad.
That's true. That's maybe true.
Maybe that's why I'm keeping him so close to my heart and saying not to ignore him. But
it's definitely true and definitely sad. The last signing I just want to get to real quick, Colin, is Joaquin Benoit signed in Washington, and their bullpen's pretty crowded. They got Doolittle, Madsen, Kinsler. They even got Sean Kelly in there. Any Romero? Any value from Benoit this year? Holds leagues? Anything?
Probably not, but I mean, there are a couple injury guys in that bullpen with Doolittle and then, like you said, Kelly. So there's a chance that he might find himself into, you know, some closing situations this year. And in that case, he might be good for draft and hold leagues and maybe a late flyer in a deep league. But other than that, not much.
Yeah, I agree. So another rumor, in addition to the Tampa Bay's unlikely to further tear down the roster, Jake Arrieta is engaged with Dialogue, doing air quotes again on Dialogue, with the Philadelphia Phillies. Colin, what would this do for Arrieta's value?
I think it'd be great for his value. I also think that it would up Aaron Nola's value a little bit, just to have a veteran presence in that locker room that has been there and done that, you know, for a couple of years, and even started out, you know, as a highly touted prospect, started to struggle, got traded. So he'd be great for Nola. And any rotation that has Vince Velasquez in it could definitely use a Jake Arrieta or any free agent pitcher, in my opinion. So, I'd love that signing for Arrieta. They should contend in a couple years, so he should be right in the thick of it if they do get to sign him.
Yeah, I agree. And they got a pretty good lineup here with a bunch of young guys, and now they got Carlos Santana. So their pitching really needs a bump here. They're sitting here with Nola, Jared Eichhoff, Vince Velasquez, Nick Pivetta, and Ben Lively. What do you think it would do for Arrieta and the Phillies, Randy, if they could get this done?
I think it keeps Arrieta's value kind of about what it was as long as he stayed in the National League. Philly's not a great pitcher's park, but it's not awful either. There's a couple rosters or a couple lineups you can pick on in that division as well. It'd be a huge bump for the Phillies. It would kind of really jolt their rebuild to the point where if they get lucky and there's a couple teams that underperform in the National League, maybe they're in wild card contention into August. So it could be a big boost for a young squad like that.
Yeah, and I think if they get Arrieta, they're only one or two pitchers away from actually competing for the wild card, because with the addition of Nischek and Tommy Hunter in the bullpen, they're with Neris, that's a great 7-8-9 you got there. And then the lineup, like I said, is pretty good. So they're pretty much one or two pitchers from actually speeding this rebuild up and being contenders. So we'll see what happens with Arrieta and where he ends up going. I want to get into some player ranks quick, and a couple guys that you guys, I know you have some sort of discrepancies on, maybe not so much, but at least a good 5-10 players in between these guys. And I want you to pretty much state your argument for why you have them where you have them ranked. And we'll start with you, Randy, and Steven Strasburg.
I have Strasburg as my number 6 starter. The production is elite of those of like a Kluber and a Sale. The innings obviously aren't there, but that's why I have him in the tier below those horses. I have him ahead of DeGrom by a spot, behind Bumgarner by a spot. So I have him right there at six, perfectly fine with him as my ace.
And where do you have him, Colin?
I have him as starting pitcher 16, and I have him behind the likes of Aaron Nola, Robbie Ray, and Carlos Martinez. His season last year, I know you touched on it, Randy, he doesn't really provide the innings. He had 175 innings pitched last year. That's his most since 2014. And everyone I hear is talking about how great of a second half that Strasburg had, and that's why he's jumping up the draft boards. He pitched half the amount of innings that he did in the first half. So if you're basing it off that, then just double those stats, and it's bound to level out. So I'm not too comfortable. I probably won't own Strasburg anywhere this year. I just don't believe the hype. I've been burned by him before, and I don't see how he could be a starting pitcher one this year.
See, I'm a little side with Randy here, Colin. And out of the four starting pitchers who I call the elite, which are Kershaw, Scherzer, Sale, and Kluber, Strasburg had a lower home runs per nine by a substantial amount than all of them. So guys really aren't getting the ball in the air against him. And his other peripherals were really, really good. I have him as my fifth starting pitcher. Randy, just out of curiosity, who do you have at five?
I had Bumgarner, but actually the more I've been looking into it, I'm tempted to flip Strasburg and Bumgarner. They're going to end up 5-6 in some kind of order in my rankings. I kind of have those two along with DeGrom as like that next tier below those big four like we mentioned.
Yeah, and Colin, I don't think you're wrong by saying what you're saying. I just think last year him throwing 175 innings really solidified Strasburg for me and a lot of people. And if he does it again, are you willing to put him in your top five or six?
I'd be so surprised if he did it again. But throughout the year, I'll definitely update my rankings. Right now, I have DeGrom at five and, like y'all are saying, Mad Bum at six. So I could see him maybe get in front of Verlander and Ray if they get off to a slow start, which is 8 and 9 for me. But I've been burned so many times, and the hype has been so big on this guy. I can't get behind it.
So another guy I wanted to speak about was Alex Wood, and I just wanted to see where you guys had him in your rankings, starting with you, Randy.
I have Wood 27th among starters.
Colin?
I have him 50th.
Really? All right. Why so low there, Colin?
He's been an injury-prone pitcher. He had the luckiest BABIP of his career last year, and he was a full run worse at home last year, and that's not good whenever you pitch half your games in LA. He also wore down as the season went along, and with the Dodgers, you're always scared about that phantom DL. So I think the innings that he provided last year, he's only done that many, I think, one other time in his career. So I see him being a real, guy that gets drafted real high, and then he's a complete bust this year.
It's funny. I have Alex Wood as my 26th pitcher, and I had him last year, and I was trying to get rid of him during his insane run because obviously it wasn't sustainable, and nobody would take him off my hands. And then towards the end of the season, this guy wasn't even starting games. I was like, damn, I can't believe this. But I have Wood at 26 on my rankings now. And I have him at 26 very cautiously, not saying that I would go after him again. I'd still rather take a guy like Zach Godley, or just for conversational purposes, maybe even John Gray. Randy, you have him at 26. What positives do you see in Alex Wood?
It's a little kind of like the Strasburg argument. When he's on the mound, you're getting some pretty elite starts and good ratios. It's just kind of the thing that when you're making your rankings, it's kind of like a philosophy. There's not a lot of... we know about how few people are throwing 200 innings anymore. So you're kind of trying to take, at least for me this year, I'm trying to get the best innings that I can. If I only get 130 from a guy, yeah, that's going to suck. But at least I'm getting those 130 really quality innings. That's why I have somebody like Wood that high, and that's probably why, I have Strasburg much higher than Colin.
And that's kind of the same conversation with Otani, that he's not going to throw you 175 innings. He might only throw you 150, but those 150 could be really quality innings. Do you kind of look at it the same way like that, Randy?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of guys like that. There's one we're going to talk about coming up that's in that kind of same boat. And then even somebody like a James Paxton, I have him 22nd. Elite innings, but guy. I don't think he's ever thrown, just off the top of my head, I don't think he's ever thrown over 150 innings. But you're going to, in this day and age, when nobody's making, you know, 32 starts outside of the top, you know, four or five guys and a Verlander, you know, you take the elite innings where you can and try to fill in.
Just out of curiosity, I know we didn't discuss this beforehand. I was actually, I wouldn't say it was an argument, but it was a conversation I was having with somebody on Twitter. And everybody that knows me knows I'm sort of a Felix Hernandez stan, a huge Felix Hernandez guy. And someone was saying that James Paxton should be starting opening day, not Felix Hernandez. I'm just curious to see how you guys feel about that. Colin, do you think they owe it to Felix to give him the opening day nod? Or you think they, since they're trying to win every single game they can, starting with game one, Paxton should get the nod?
I think if they're trying to win, then Paxton should definitely get the nod. I don't even have Felix Hernandez ranked in my top 100 pitchers, so that tells you how I feel about him. Yeah, I would definitely give the ball to Paxton. I don't see how Felix can make any more than maybe 15, 20 starts this year with the way that he's been deteriorating and how heavily they used him for his whole career leading up to last year.
I hate to hear things like that, Colin, and I really like you a lot less than I did a couple minutes ago. Randy, who do you think should be starting opening day, just out of curiosity?
Give Felix the ball. I mean, if I'm a Mariners fan and I'm going to opening day, who the hell knows? That might be the only time he takes the ball all year, so let's give him the ball and see what happens. So I haven't. It's a sentimental thing. I have no problem with game one or game whatever. Let Felix have the ball.
Same thing as if they made the wild card playoff last year, the one game, I think Felix was going to get the ball then too.
That's a little dangerous.
So two more pitchers I wanted to talk about. We could save Felix for another show. Lance McCullers, where do you guys have him? Where do you have him, Colin?
I have him as 59th. And the thing that I have with Strasburg, Wood, and McCullers is just the injury thing, the injury problem that all three of these pitchers have. And I know, Randy, you said that you like to take, 110, 130 innings of great innings, like Strasburg, Wood, McCullers could provide you. However, for me, I would rather take an Andrew Miller that will provide great ratios and maybe get up into the 90, 100 innings if he's used right, and maybe even a Brad Peacock, like we talked a little bit earlier, who could just solid give me those ratios that I need and might be sneaky for either holds or wins or saves if it comes down to it.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Having these swingman guys that are kind of revolutionizing baseball, getting that 100 innings, but that's an elite, like way elite 100 innings like you would be getting from one of the top guys. And the thing with McCullers, I'm not big on him, is because when he gets that second, third time in the order, I forgot who we were talking about before, maybe it was Chavez, you said, Randy, when McCullers gets to that second or third time in the order, he was getting killed last year. So even if he was healthy, I don't trust him late in games. What about you, Randy?
Yeah, I love McCullers. The skills are through the roof. He's got the big time curveball. The injury history is there. There's no hiding it. And then even last year, the numbers are a little inflated. But if you look, there was three really rough starts in a row at the end of July that a DL stint followed. So sometimes I kind of picked up on that with the year before with Aaron Nola, where he had those couple of really rough starts. DL stint happens, comes back, and all of a sudden, he's back to normal. So sometimes you take things like that out. Again, just kind of a drafting philosophy and how you like to build your team. I'll take the chance on, that this is the year McCullers can get up to 180 innings, and if he does, that's going to be huge. And then even though I know it's probably not happening, I can build my team with, some innings eaters at the back that I know are going to stay in there and still take the 115 to 150 innings that somebody like a McCullers is going to give you.
See, I could do the same thing. Sorry about that, Mike. I could do the same thing, stack the end of my roster with some inning eater, maybe like CC Sabathia or someone like that, and just take Andrew Miller or Brad Peacock, like I said. With McCullers, he has a one pitch that'll get people out, and that's that curveball. The other two pitches that he has, the fastball and changeup, they're both rated on Fangraphs as a negative pitch. He did show a slider last year, which he just incorporated, so there's, he might have worked on that over the offseason. And yeah, if he stays healthy, I could see him, ending up in the rank that you have him at, Randy. But I just, like I said, my philosophy, I guess, and it's kind of coming out now, I'd rather get those middle inning guys that'll just give me great ratios, possibility of getting me late innings or a lot of innings with a couple wins, couple saves here and there.
And I'm just curious to see what you guys think. Would you rather have Charlie Morton or Lance McCullers? And I'm assuming you'd take McCullers, Randy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, now, I don't know what the ADP and the draft price is, but I would still probably take McCullers unless Morton is just, you know, essentially free, which I don't think is the case this year. But yeah, I still have McCullers ahead of Morton.
What about you, Colin?
I have Brad Peacock ahead of both of them. Morton, I have him as ranked 78th. So I am not a believer in his post-hype career where he's made a few adjustments, and that's great. But with the Houston starting rotation, besides Verlander, I'm basically staying out of it, and I'll grab Peacock late and see him as being, you know, their fifth or fourth starter most of the year.
Yeah. What about Trevor Bauer, Colin? Would you take Trevor Bauer before Lance McCullers?
I'm digging myself a big hole. So I have Bauer ranked as pitcher number 69. Another guy I'm not believing in. I actually have Salazar ahead of him by one, which I might change. But, yeah, I'm not a believer in Bauer. He's another guy that was a great prospect coming up. Never lived up to the hype. He showed a little bit last year, but I just can't get on board.
Yeah, I got killed on Twitter by one or two guys for having Salazar ahead of Bauer, and that was like 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then Salazar got hurt, and I'm like, these guys probably think I'm retarded. Randy, would you take Bauer before McCullers or no?
No. I still have McCullers ahead. I mean, I have McCullers, like we said, 24th on my starting pitcher ranking, yeah. So there's a lot of guys I'm taking McCullers over.
Yeah, all right, so we'll see what happens with that. And the last guy I wanted to touch on real quick was Dylan Bundy, and tell me where you guys have him ranked. Randy, what are you, starting with you?
I have Bundy 54th, and I know Colin is actually well ahead of me, which was surprising because I like Bundy. I see him pitch fairly regularly here in Baltimore. But for me, the skills are good, but they're not good enough yet to overcome the lack of ground balls that he gets, and he pitches in a park and a division that you need to get the occasional ground ball, and that's why you see the blow-ups and the, you know, he's cruising along 4 or 5 innings, and then all of a sudden it's a single, a walk, and then he's giving up a 3-run bomb, and he's out. And there goes those, you know, 5 really good innings that he was working on. So there's still obviously plenty of room for him to grow. But where his skills are at right now, he's just not – I'm not ready to bump him up inside, like, my top 50 starting pitchers.
Yeah, he really took a big step with not walking as many guys. His walks per nine went from 3.45 in 2016 to 2.71 in 2017. So he seems like he's trending in the right direction. His K percentage stayed the same. What are your thoughts on Bundy, Colin?
Yeah, I have him as ranked starting pitcher 34, and I guess that makes me an Orioles fan, Randy. I guess we can go to a game sometime. But yeah, so with his injury, he had the Tommy John injury, and I know you know before that, Randy, he was a highly touted prospect. He's been kind of held back, I believe, the first 2 years coming back from that Tommy John. Last year, he developed a slider, which was almost unhittable whenever he could keep it down in the zone. He has 3-plus pitches with that slider, the curveball, which is average, and then that awesome changeup. He was known for a great fastball and great fastball command coming up as a prospect, and that's one of the things that goes away whenever you have that Tommy John surgery. So I think the third year removed from that Tommy John, he'll get that fastball command and build off his slider, curveball, and changeup, and I see him being a dominant pitcher this year for fantasy.
Well, I'm sure Randy would really appreciate that if Dylan Bundy became a dominant fantasy pitcher, so I think he's rooting for you to be right on that one.
Yeah, we need that here in Baltimore.
Yeah, for sure. So before we go, I just wanted to touch on a couple more guys. You don't necessarily have to rank them. Just tell me your thoughts as a whole between all these Humidor guys in Arizona. So you got Greinke, Ray, Walker, Godley, and Corbin. Now, everybody and their mother is talking about the Humidor right now. Some guys think it's going to really affect. Some guys don't think it's going to affect as much. And a lot of guys are high on these pitchers, even higher than they were before, because of the Humidor. Is the Humidor effect going to change your opinion on these guys, Colin?
It does. It actually, you know, makes my point about Ray a little bit better, because before the Humidor news, I had Ray as my SP9. So I see him as a high-risk, high-reward guy, which is kind of weird based on our previous conversations with the injury guys, but I want to get that reward, and it just got a lot higher with the Humidor coming in. So I had him as a top 10 pitcher before. I'm gonna keep him there. With Greinke, I have him as SP17. He's safe. He's kind of boring to me, but I would not mind ending up with him. I actually took him in our staff league that we're doing now, but he could definitely be a borderline starting pitcher one. I'm with Greinke being there with the Humidor. And then the last guy I'll touch on, I'll leave the other two for Randy, would be Patrick Corbin. I see a great season coming from him. He's another Tommy John guy that's coming back. He's a ground ball pitcher, which plays great with that humidor because those ground ball percentages just went way up for every guy that goes in that park. And those fly balls that he was giving up, they won't leave the park anymore with the humidor. So he had a 3.15 ERA at home within 103 innings last year, and I see that getting even better last year. So he's definitely – those three guys are the pitchers that I'm trying to get in all my drafts this year for Arizona.
What are your thoughts on the other two, Randy?
Well, just kind of the group as a whole and with the whole humidor, I understand that runs are definitely going to go down in Chase Field this year. But I – Some of the stuff that I've seen with guys, guys in the industry that are pushing these Arizona pitchers way up, I feel like they're kind of forgetting that these guys still need to pitch well. You know, Arizona is not going to go from the second best hitters park in the league to, you know, a San Francisco, San Diego, Kauffman Stadium kind of territory all the way in, you know, in the bottom, you know, bottom four or five parks in the league in terms of, in terms of offense. Ray is somebody, even before all this, you know, he walks 10% of his guys, you know, last year, you know, and that was with a great season. So I can't have somebody that walks that much and gives up 40% hard hit rate as my ace. The hard hit rate should come down again with the humidor, but if you can't throw strikes, you can't throw strikes. Doesn't matter where you're pitching at. Taiwan Walker was actually the one that I bumped up the most because his home ERA and his road ERA were night and day. He really struggled at home. And the ratios backed it up. So he's somebody that I could see taking a step as a result of this. Godley was somebody that had a similar ERA home and road. I like Godley. Corbin was actually the exact opposite. I was surprised. His ERA at home last year was 3.15, and it was over 5 on the road. And he's somebody that's just been kind of inconsistent, and I'm not really buying into. But I do think one thing we need to just remember when we're evaluating these Arizona guys is they still need to pitch well, you know, regardless of what the humidor does to the, you know, the hitting environment in Chase Field.
Yeah.
And Mike, real quick on Taiwan Walker, stop me if you heard this. You think he's going to have a breakout season?
I think he is. I'm a big Walker guy ever since his days in Seattle. I remember the first time I went up there, he was starting the first game I went to, and I watched him do a bullpen right before the game, and this kid was throwing gas, and I think he's definitely trending in the right direction as far as his peripheral goes. So I like him. I like Godley a lot. I'm a big Godley guy. I mean, pretty much everyone is at this point. And, like, I kind of disagree with you on Ray a little bit, Randy, because I'm a huge Ray guy. I took him in our staff league. I think he was the 54th pick, third round they took him. And I think his strikeouts pretty much mask all his inabilities as far as his peripherals go. Everything that's bad about him, I think, is made up in the strikeout department. So as a whole, I'm really big on Robbie Ray. What are your thoughts on Ray, Colin, before we sign off?
Yeah, Ray's my SP9, so I'm all in on him this year. Like I said, I can deal with the walk rate because I feel like I'm going to balance my roster with great ratio guys. And then his potential for strikeouts, his potential for innings, that's someone that I want as my workhorse. That's someone that I want to spend a high draft pick on so that way I can just set it and forget it with Robbie Ray.
Yeah, and like I always say, I've heard all the narrative, the good, the bad. If you don't want to take him, Randy, that's fine with me. If we're ever in another league together, that'll just leave him for me, and I'll take that chance on him. Let me just get out this Vertex promo real quick before we sign off. If you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld, the Vertex betting, is one of the best in the business. And unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There's no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You'll get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. If you guys want more humidor talk, I think Justin had Derek Carty, who's pretty much like the humidor president at this point, on his podcast a couple of days ago. So you guys could go check that out. Randy, you want to just give him your Twitter and anything you're working on?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at RTH222. And just getting through draft season, we got some drafts going on now.
And if you made it this far in the podcast, it's kind of on me that I haven't mentioned it yet. Today's Randy's birthday, his 29th birthday, and he was kind enough to do a podcast with us. So thanks for that, Randy.
Yeah, thanks. Last year in my prime. I'll start throwing down draft boards next year.
Oh, for sure. For sure. If you haven't already, you know?
Yeah, I probably have.
Colin, do you want to just tell us what you're working on? I know you got that sleeper article out.
Yeah, definitely. You can find me at Twitter. I actually changed my Twitter handle. It's at cweatherwax13. I just released the all-sleeper team this past week for friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I got a lot of drafts going on with both of you guys, actually. So we're working on the staff leagues. And last thing for me is just happy birthday, Randy. You have a great dinner.
Thanks, man.
And you guys can follow me at Mike the Rotocop, common spelling. Check out my work over at fantasyassembly.com. I just had Brian Entrekin. You probably know him as Casey Bubba on Twitter. We talk some Giants if you want to go listen to that. Some San Francisco Giants. And other than that, just we'll keep working on it every week. And hopefully we're getting better and better. And you guys like it more and more. So signing off. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.